Music in the Middle Ages, 600 to 1400, the beginnings of music. Who invented music? Who was the first to conceive a melody? Who was the first to create a musical instrument? What did the first song sound like? These are good questions that no living person knows the answer to. Yet, for thousands of years, people have wondered what the answers were. Different cultures have different stories as to the origin of music and musical instruments. The Greeks have a story of how Hermes, messenger of one of the Greek gods, was walking along the beach one day. As he was walking, he tripped over a tortoise shell. As he fell over the shell, it made a beautiful musical sound. After picking himself up, he picked up the shell and found that the sinews of the animal were still stretched across the opening of the empty shell. As he plucked the sinew, it made a musical sound. From this beginning, Hermes developed a harp-like instrument called the lyre. From the lyre came the harp, and from the harp came all the other stringed instruments, such as violins, lutes, guitars, and others. But that's only a folk story. The Bible tells us that Cain's fourth great grandson, named Jubal, was the father of all that handled the harp and the organ. But what those instruments were like and how they were played, we do not know. What we do know is that many cultures ascribed great power and magic to music. Many of the medieval musicians spent much of their time trying to discover the secrets of the magical power of music, as told in written and oral accounts that were handed down for centuries. For example, the Egyptians have a myth that tells how one of their great cities was built by a flute player just playing his flute. Now, we know that our Saturday chores are not completed by blowing on a flute. Dinner dishes still await us after practicing the piano. Perhaps this Egyptian legend is their way of saying that work seemed easier when they listened to music. The Chinese have a story about a master musician named Wen. As a young man, Wen went to a far-off city to study the zither. After studying for 3 years, he still could not play very well. Perhaps you've had similar feelings after studying the piano or another instrument for 3 years. Well, Wen's teacher became more than just a little frustrated. He recommended that Wen go back to his village. Wen replied that he could not play music until he felt it in his heart. After a long absence, Wen returned one day to his teacher and asked if he could play for his former teacher. The teacher said he would listen. Then Wen plucked the first string, and spring came. The trees bore fruit, and a cool, soft wind blew. After the second string was plucked, the wind blew again, and the leaves turned from their summer green to beautiful autumn colors. Upon plucking the third string, snow fell. The lakes and streams froze. The fourth string brought the heat of the sun, and as he strummed all four strings together, there was such beautiful sound that all the land was blessed with great prosperity and harmony. This may sound fanciful and amusing to us, but many cultures related music to science, the planets, and everything that had order. They believed the universe was kept running in peace and harmony through music. When a new Chinese emperor was crowned, one of the first things he would do was to have all the instruments in the kingdom tuned. They believed that if the previous emperor had kept the instruments tuned properly, he would not have fallen. There are many, many stories from nearly every culture. What we learn from these stories is that music was an important part of these people's lives. Music accompanied them to war and worship, play and prayer, labor and love. Things have not changed much over the centuries. Our instruments are a little different, but we still hear music at the store, in our cars, in our homes, at the dentist's office, on the beach, everywhere we go. Perhaps your father has taught you how to play ball or use the computer. For thousands of years, that was how music was taught. Music was handed down from father to son, passed from generation to generation. It was the Greeks, who were so interested in all kinds of learning, that were perhaps the first to write down their music. they assigned a letter to each note, much the same way that we have a letter name for each of our notes. It was also a Greek that developed our major scale divided into half steps and whole steps. We even know the man's name. His name was Pythagoras. He experimented with an instrument that was the forerunner of the piano, called the monochord. The monochord was a rectangular box with a single string that stretched from head to toe of the box. He found that if he placed his finger exactly halfway across the string, that the string played an octave higher. He tried touching the string at other places and soon developed the mathematical justification for our musical scale. And with that lengthy introduction and overview, we're ready to discuss music in the Middle Ages, often referred to as the Dark Ages or the Medieval Ages. This fascinating period of musical history covered the years from 600 to 1400 AD. You will be soon listening and understanding the music that your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents used to tap their toe and snap their fingers to. It will sound different than what you're used to hearing, but just because it is different doesn't mean it's any better or any worse than today's music. Their music was near perfect for their generation, just as ours suits us. By understanding the music and culture of other people, nations, and time periods, we become more sensitive to other people. We also come to know ourselves better, and thus place ourselves in a position of a higher level from which to serve our families, community, and nation. Listen carefully to what we discuss, as there will be a brief quiz at the end of the tape. The quiz is to help you solidify in your mind the things we discuss. We will focus our discussion of the Middle Ages around three general categories. First, historical events of the Middle Ages. Second, musical trends. And third, famous composers. Let's begin. There are four historical trends we will discuss. The first is the political climate of the Middle Ages. Before the time of Christ, the Greeks were the leaders of the Western world. They were great thinkers and loved life. Sometime before the time of Christ, the Romans conquered the Greeks and much of the rest of the Western world and absorbed the Greek culture. But the Romans weren't great thinkers like the Greeks were. Their strength lay in being great leaders and warriors. Nearly five centuries after Christ, the Roman Empire dissolved. Europe was divided into small warring kingdoms. Castles were built as places of refuge and battle. The Catholic Church assumed a major role as the leader of the Western world for nearly 1,000 years. Later, we will discuss how this affected the music. In summary, then, the Catholic Church dominated the Western world, which was divided into small, warring kingdoms. Our second historical event is more of an attitude than an event. This was a time of great superstition. We have superstitions today. We talk about Friday the 13th being an unlucky day. We talk about never walking under a ladder or keeping black cats from running in front of us. When a person sneezes, we frequently hear someone say, "Bless you." Many of these superstitions come to us from the Middle Ages. The people of the Middle Ages thought that when a person sneezed, they were possessed by an evil spirit. The act of sneezing was a way to expel the spirit. People would say, "Bless you," as a kind of prayer to God that the evil spirit would not return. If you look at the churches and cathedrals and paintings of this time period, you see demons and angels all over. The church surrounded their service in a sense of awe and wonder, mystery and otherworldliness. The sacred music of this time period is often filled with this same sense of mystery and superstition. Light is often associated with intelligence. Darkness is associated with ignorance. And that is exactly what our third historical event deals with. Most people of the Western world were not interested in learning. Even the kings and nobility usually could not read or write. If you wanted education, you became a part of the church leadership and clergy. One French king named Charlemagne, who ruled during the middle of the Dark Ages, thought his people would be better off educated. The people resisted. They didn't want to be educated. When Charlemagne died, so did his dream of an educated people. People of the Middle Ages had a backward approach to learning, which is best represented by the Apologists and Scholasticism. Their approach was to declare the truth and then set out to prove it. For example, if the church said the earth was flat, the Apologists and Scholastics would set about finding all the evidence and reasons why the earth was flat. If the church said that the sun revolved around the earth and the earth was the center of the universe, the apologistic writers would find all the evidence and reasons why this was so. This method of logic seems silly to us today. Now we do it by gathering the evidence first and then forming our conclusions. Again, this backward approach to learning was reflected in the music. Music developed and progressed very little until it got closer to the Renaissance and a more forward attitude towards discovery and learning. The fourth and final historical item we will discuss is that this was the age of chivalry, of kings, castles, knights in shining armor who fought to protect damsels in distress, at least in theory. Knights would engage in jousts and tournaments, where upon their horses they would charge at each other and try to knock the opponent off to the ground. If successful, the winning knight would then jump off his horse, and the two opponents would fight until one became too tired, too wounded, or too dead to fight anymore. These tournaments were big events in the towns where they were held. On the day of the tournament, the rich would gather in their finest clothes to the grandstand. The poor would stand on foot around the outside of the playing field. Musicians would provide lots of music throughout the tournament, and again at the victor's feast when all was completed. To the excited gathering would come fortune tellers, peddlers, money lenders, acrobats, mimes, trouvères, troubadours, wandering minstrels, wandering scholars, women of high repute, and women of loose morals. It was a big festival of song, dance, fights, brawls, and wild betting. Our ancestors could really party, and party big. In summary, we have discussed four historical events. The first, the Catholic Church dominated the Western world, which was divided up into small warring kingdoms. The second, it was a time of great superstition. The third, it was a time when few were interested in learning, and those who did learn did it backward, starting first with conclusions, and then finding evidence. The last was the age of chivalry, knights, castles, jousts, and tournaments. Now let's turn our attention to the musical trends and explore what was going on musically in the Middle Ages. Basically, there were two kinds of music, secular and sacred. Now, sacred music is church music or religious music. Secular music, spelled S-E-C-U-L-A-R. Secular music is any music that isn't religious. In this time period, it also means folk music or music of the common people. Now, since those who didn't belong to the church leadership didn't know how to read or write, they couldn't write down their music. Consequently, we have very little secular music that has come to us from the Middle Ages. Most of the secular music we do have comes from the last part of the Middle Ages. The Middle Ages is sometimes called the Age of Faith, and although this was a very superstitious and religious people, that doesn't mean that they just sat around saying prayers all day. We have already discussed how they could really throw a party. We also mentioned that there was a lot of music at those parties. Now let's talk about the music and those who made it at these parties and other occasions. The men who made the music and entertained the people were called things like minstrels, troubadours, trouvères, mini-singers, and master singers, and jongleurs. The difference between these depended on who they played for and their social status. Some played for kings, some played in bars and saloons. The troubadours and trouvères were minstrels and musicians of noble birth. Sometimes they were kings themselves. In every age, in every country, there has always been a class of men who have been professional musicians. In Rome, these men were called joculators. From this came the French jongleur during the Middle Ages. In England, they were called jugglers, which points to some of their other duties as actors, jugglers, bear trainers, conjurers, and acrobats. Although often condemned by the church, these men were welcome in many of the castles and monasteries of the day. Some of these men wandered from place to place. Others stayed in one town or the court of a king. Those who traveled were the focus of great excitement. You can imagine the residents of a castle looking across the land and seeing a lonely minstrel walking toward the castle on a dusty road. With the arrival of the minstrel came welcome gossip and stories from other castles and other lands. These minstrels would sing of many things, like famous wars and battles. But for just a moment, think of the type of song that is played on the radio today. What subject do most of these songs deal with? It is love, isn't it? Most of the songs on the radio are love songs, and that is the way it was then. Until the last part of the Middle Ages, most secular songs were not written down, so very few are remaining. Of those that began to be written down around the year 1000, only the melody was written, no accompaniment. Now we know from the paintings and written accounts that survive that the secular singing of these minstrels was accompanied by instruments. So even though no instrumental part was ever written down, we assume that the songs of the minstrels were accompanied by an improvised accompaniment. Most of these songs were modal, but the most popular mode used was the one that corresponds to our major scale. The example you will hear now is a French trouvère song. It has been translated into English so you can understand the words. It is called To Rejoice My Heart. To rejoice my heart, I wish to make a new song. Wish, I wish to sing to you, a pretty lady. She it is to whom I give my undying love. She has captured all of my heart with all of her love. Now let's turn our attention to the sacred music of the day. Sacred music is church music or religious music. The early church music was all sung in unison. No one had thought of singing more than one part at the same time. Everyone sang the melody because that's all there was. The melodies they sang were called chant. A chant sounded something like this. Did you hear the people singing in unison, or all on the same melody? Did you hear any women singing? That's right, you did not hear women singing. Only men were allowed to sing in the church until about the 1700s. Before that time, little boys would sing the very high parts. But let's return to our discussion of the chant, which was always sung in unison. That is, until finally, after thousands of years, a remarkable thing happened that was to dramatically affect the development of music. In the 9th century, someone thought of adding a second part to the chant. Someone thought it would be really neat if they sang the same melody 5 notes higher than the others. It sounded something like this. They called this type of singing organum. This was such an exciting thing that it was not long before someone tried another idea, adding another note, a fourth below the chant, in addition to the one a fifth above. Then they got another idea. They said, let's start on the same note and then spread out to the fifth, like this.
Oh.
The next idea that took hold was singing the chant very slowly and composing new melodic material on top of it. These ideas were so radical that the church decided to only let them sing in parts on special feast days like Christmas or Easter. The music sounds so passive and peaceful to us, who are used to electric guitars, drums, and synthesizers, that it's difficult for us to imagine our great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers and grandmothers getting so excited over this music. But they did. They loved it. As you listen to more of it, you may grow to find the beauty in it, too. Go to a record store and ask for a recording of Gregorian chant. As you listen, you will sense some of the feelings and humanness of these people who have long since died. Another musical event of the Middle Ages was the development of the keyboard. You use the keyboard when you play the piano. The first keyboard was the organ keyboard. Only one note was played at a time to accompany singing, so the keys were so large that they had to be hit with a fist to be played. The only keys that were on the first keyboard are what we now call the white keys. C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C was then the basis of music. However, as time progressed, the musicians did not like the interval from F to B. It was called the devil's interval. Today, we call it the tritone, or the augmented fourth. Anyway, to avoid using it, they cut the wood in between the B and the C and added the first black note and called it the musica ficta, or false note. We now call it a B flat. So imagine in your mind a keyboard with all white keys, except for one black key, the B flat, between the A and the B. The early keyboards covered about 2 octaves, which correspond with the singing range. As composers wrote songs that went lower and higher, the keyboard gradually expanded. The next black note to be introduced was the F sharp, then the E flat, C sharp, and finally the G sharp. By the year 1450, the keyboard as we know it was fully developed. Aside from changing the width and length and color of the keys, it has remained pretty much the same. Another development that occurred in the Middle Ages that is still with us today is the development of notation. What is notation? It is the way you write down music. No one exactly knows how we started writing down our music. They didn't keep very good records in those days. The Greeks were perhaps the first to write music down. Their system was crude by our standards, but it worked for them. They gave each note a letter name from their alphabet. After the Romans, music was no longer written down. The music that was written was destroyed. As you recall, the people of the Middle Ages were not greatly interested in education. The people of the church were, though, but for years they chose to hand their music down by rote. Each generation would teach the songs to the next generation by singing them. Over a period of years, the notes were named in a similar fashion to the Greeks, assigning each note a letter of the alphabet, A through G, and then starting the sequence over again. Remember, at first, there were only white keys, from C to C. Gradually, a desire to write down these notes came to be. The first musicians wrote the words to the chants, and then above the chant, they wrote the direction of the melody using little boxes called neumes. These neumes only gave a general direction of the melody and did not indicate the exact pitch. When the little boxes started going up, that would remind the singers to sing up a little higher. When the little boxes started coming down, they would be reminded to sing the melody down a little bit lower. Then someone had the idea of adding one line above the words. When that little box or neume came to that line, the exact pitch to be sung was known. When the little boxes went above the line, once again, they were only guessing it as to where it should be. Gradually, more lines were added to the staff until by the year 1000, there were 5 lines and 4 spaces as we have today. Composers continued to experiment until the 13th century, though, with as many as 6 to 8 lines. At the beginning of the first line was written the letter F. The F indicated the note that the pitch was to be sung when the little square note or neume was written on it. From this F came our bass clef. When they put a G in front of the line, that meant that it was to be a G. That G gradually developed into our treble clef. The addition of lines was a wonderful means by which composers could indicate the exact pitch that a note was to be sung. However, the neumes did not tell how long a note was to be held. Several things were tried, like the invention of rhythmic modes or patterns. But the idea that stuck and is with us today is the system of adding stems, dots, white notes, and black notes. During the Renaissance, the musicians turned the square neume on its side, and the notes were shaped like diamonds. By the end of the Renaissance, styles changed and musicians drew the note heads as circles rather than diamonds. Today, we still use circles, dots, and stems to indicate how long a note is to be held. But it all had its beginning in the Middle Ages. And that, briefly, is how our system of notation developed. We have discussed 4 musical trends and developments of the Middle Ages. Now we will briefly discuss the composers of the Middle Ages. Nothing is known about most of the composers of the Middle Ages. We don't even know their names. However, there are a few of those who have survived along with their work. The name Léonin, Perrotin, and William de Machaut have survived, and much of their music. There were other composers too, but the one we are going to discuss was named Guido de Arezzo. He was an Italian, and he lived around the year 1000. Now, if you remember, the year 1000 was when they added a 4th and a 5th line. It was Guido de Arezzo's idea to add the 4th and 5th line. His job in the church was to teach the choir to sing. He needed a faster way to teach the choir boys how to read music. He chose a hymn that was sung like a scale. It went something like this.
Utque ant laxis, resonare fibris, mira gestorum, famuli tuorum, sove polluti.
You probably noticed that the hymn tune to which those words were sung just simply went up the scale. It is a prayer to John the Baptist, asking him to wash our wickedness away. Guido took the first word from each line, ut, re, mi, fa, sol, la, sa, and associated them with the note of the scale upon which they were sung. This gave us the famous ut, re, mi, fa, sol, la, sa, which was later changed to do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. This system of teaching singers to read music is still widely used in schools today. We are now finished with our discussion on music in the Middle Ages and are ready to begin our quiz. Pause the tape after each question to give yourself time to answer. There are 8 questions. 1. Briefly relate the Greek story of how Hermes got the idea of inventing a harp and other stringed instruments. 2. Briefly tell a Chinese legend of how music was thought to bring order to the universe. 3. What are the years that the Middle Ages covered? 4. Name a historical event or condition of the Middle Ages. 5. Why don't we have many examples of secular music from the Middle Ages? 6. Tell the history of the keyboard. How did it develop? 7. How did our system of notation with a staff and notes develop? 8. How did Guido de Arezzo use a hymn to teach the choir boys how to sing? That's the end of the quiz. How did you do? If you got them all correct, you are a very good listener. Keep listening to the tape until you can correctly answer all 8 questions. Consult the Music Wonderful Music catalog for even more in-depth study of the Middle Ages or other time periods.